Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. I'm surprised there's so many of you on this early Sunday. I had to get up at 5 o'clock to get here, so I definitely win early morning Sundays, I think. Did anyone get up earlier than 5? Yes! Ah, oh, damn it! I lost out to the front row. Brilliant. Anyway, my name is Sean Conway. For those of you who don't know who I am, I recently became the first person in history to climb Kilimanjaro dressed as a penguin. Right there. I still claim that this is probably the hardest adventure I have ever done. Waddling up, literally waddling up with the yellow feet and everything was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done. And I'll probably put this on my gravestone one day. His proudest moment, waddling up. It was actually quite funny because I felt quite bad because it was everyone with all their altimeters and all their gear and their poles, walking poles, like taking Kilimanjaro really seriously. It is, after all, the highest freestanding mountain in the world. And then I would waddle past like this, and they'd be like, oh, damn it. But actually, it kind of made them realize if a bloody penguin can do it, then so can I. Anyway, I'm here talking today about wild swimming, wild swimming. I got into swimming at a very, very young age. I was 15 years old here. Believe it or not, I looked 12, or probably 9. 15 years old, I swam the biggest open water swimming event in the world. It's in South Africa. It's called the Midmar Mile. It's a mile across a lake. And I did it at school. And I fell in love with swimming. I was rubbish. I didn't even have goggles. I mean, it was like I could have hardly see by the end of it. But I really, after that, it was my proudest moment as a kid, swimming a whole mile. I mean, it was misty. You could hardly even see the other side. And I thought, wow, swimming is such a cool thing. I'm definitely going to carry on swimming for the rest of my life. But as many things, that definitely didn't happen, and it was pretty much the last swim I did for a very, very long time. I then got stuck into the world and the rat race and what you should be doing with your life and working hard and earning money for nothing and blah, 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 and all that sort of thing. And I turned 30 and realized I'd lost my kind of purpose, my passion in life of going off and challenging myself, much like I did here when I was a kid, you know, having this big goal and going for it. So I started to look back at various things and biggest challenges that I had done in the past. And this picture came up, and this was framed in my mum's bedroom. And I remember thinking, wow, that was the last, when I was a kid, that was the last big thing I ever did. So I started looking into swimming and open water swimming and came across all these fascinating and amazing people like Gertrude Adelaide, first woman to swim across the English Channel back in the day. Amazing, amazing woman. And then we got Diana Nyad, who swam from Cuba to Florida. Took her something like 30, 40 years. She did it in 5 attempts to swim across. She swam for 52 hours straight, 52 hours, just nonstop. And you aren't even allowed to sort of have any support. They have to sort of dangle food on the end of a rod with a string. I mean, it really is tough. And what an amazing woman. Then we have Lewis Pugh, swims in the Arctic. He now swims in parts of the Arctic that were ice not that long ago. And he can reduce his core body temperature down to like nearly nothing. It's amazing, really amazing swimmer. And then my favorite swimmer of all, I think, is a guy called Martin Strell, who famously swam the Amazon River. Amazon River took him 70 days, I think, just a bit under, as he swam all the way down the Amazon. It was incredible. He used to have a boat next to him, and when the piranhas came, they would throw blood on the other side of the boat so that they wouldn't go after him. Incredible man. So in my mind, I'm looking at all these people going, wow, I mean, there's no way I'm going to be able to do a swim. You know, if these guys, they're all superhuman, you know, how is that even possible? And then my mate Dave decided to swim down the Missouri River in America. I was like, he's just my mate Dave. Like, if he can do a big swim, he's swimming 1,000 miles down the Missouri, and he was putting pictures on social media, and it just really looked amazing. I thought, wow, you know, if Dave can swim 1,000 miles, then, you know, I can definitely do a swim. And he inspired me to think of a swimming adventure. So I thought, right, what can I do? Let's think of something cool, a cool place to swim. And I was looking at various things. I just was currently writing my Land's End to John O'Groats cycle book. So I thought, ooh, why don't I become the fastest person to swim Land's End to John O'Groats? Such a famous route. My same friend Dave skateboarded it years back. Someone's hit a golf ball up it. In November, someone pushed a bed in their pajamas. This girl in her pajamas pushed a bed. I hope she slept in it each night as well, but that's amazing. It's such an iconic route. I thought, I'll just become the fastest person to swim Land's End John O'Groats. Yes, let's do this. Went online, did some research, and slowly found out that actually no one had even attempted it. I thought, well, that's a bit worrying. Except one chap. There's a chap who put a swimming pool on the back of a van and did lengths as they drove it. Thought that was amazing. That's such a British thing to do, you know. Imagine like going down the M5 and there's this dude on the back of a truck. Hey, how's it going? But anyway, I thought, right, okay, I did my research. And nothing suggested swimming the length of Britain was going to be impossible. Nothing suggested that. It was just going to be long and difficult. So I put things on open water swimming forums, yachting forums, just to find out a little bit about, you know, what it takes, what's the tide like, and X, Y, Z. Straight away, it became quite clear that there was going to be not a lot of sort of positivity and feedback around this swim. Like, whenever you have a big idea, no matter what it is, it could be a hobby, it could be a business, it could be if you're in a band, you want to play Wembley, you have these big ideas, you're always going to get people who go, oh, no, it's not possible, mate. But on the swim, they really were making an effort. They weren't just saying, oh, mate, you know, I don't think it's possible. I was getting long emails, really long emails going, Sean, I don't think it's possible because the tides are too strong, the water's too cold, the waves are too big. You're going to get sucked to Australia in a whirlpool, mate. I was like, what? It's not even possible. You're going to get eaten by a killer whale in Scotland. I was like, thanks for letting me know. I did not know they existed there. A killer whale is just a big dolphin, right? That's what I keep telling myself. Anyway, there was a lot of negativity in it. When you're trying something that no one else has even attempted, and generally the consensus is it is impossible, you really are just winging it. So for 6 months, I trained in a pool in Cheltenham. To save money, I moved back in with my mum. Trained in this pool, up and down, did a few lengths, got seasick on my first training session because of the waves generated by the slow lane. It's really embarrassing. But anyway, I did a bit of practice, and eventually on the 30th of June 2013, I stood there at Land's End, ready to jump in the ocean to start the world's first ever length of Britain swim. I remember standing here looking at the ocean going, I have not thought this through at all. Because I had to move in with my mum in Cheltenham, there's no sea in Cheltenham, believe it or not, so I couldn't do any sea training. So at this point in time, I had not swum in the sea once, which is a very bad idea. If one of you are going to swim Britain, I'm hoping someone will one day, that is a bad idea, by the way. But I couldn't afford to drive all the way down to Somerset or Devon to do any sea swimming, and I kind of knew I'd get fit along the way. That I had it in me. But at this point, I really wasn't as prepared as I was hoping to be. I was hoping that the swim was going to take me 2.5 months. It actually landed up taking a little bit longer. But anyway, so there I was, pretty excited. To do these big ideas, when you have a big idea, it's so important to find and nurture the people who support you. You're going to get lots of people who say, no, no, it's rubbish, it's impossible, you can't do it. They're generally on the sofa, you know, a bit lazy, a bit unhappy. So don't listen to them. Find the people who will support you on your way. I needed a crew. So I needed a skipper for a boat that was going to go next to me. So I managed to convince my mate Jez to quit his job. He lived on a canal boat, so I thought, you know boats. Can you come and skipper a yacht? He's also a hoarder, which is amazing. Whenever we went ashore, he'd come back with like half a flipper and a goggle, and it was brilliant. But he had this sort of gung-ho attitude of like, yeah, anything's possible, which I loved. I then also needed a second mate on the boat. I found crazy Owen, who was a bit mad. His seagoing experience was he took a ferry to France once, which I thought, that'll do. And the third person I need is someone in a kayak next to me. Now, in 2009, I did the famous Gloucestershire cheese rolling. Has anyone heard of that? If you haven't, you got to check it out on YouTube. Where basically, it's a 200-year-old tradition where you fall down this hill, break various bones, and if you get to the bottom the first, you win the cheese. Annoyingly, I came second, but I dislocated my shoulder. So when I swim, I kind of drop my shoulder, which turns my body to the left, and then I push off to the right. So I swim within basically 180 degrees, within 100 meters if I got nothing to look at. So I needed someone in a kayak. So I found Mad M, who'd never kayaked in her life. True story, never kayaked in her life, except I made her go on the Thames for half an hour the week before, just in case. She didn't fall out, so I was like, brilliant. Now, on paper, none of us were the best at our jobs, including me. I mean, I definitely wasn't the best swimmer in the world. The crew will happily admit on paper, if you looked at their statistics, they were definitely not the best people for the jobs. But that didn't matter. What mattered was this kind of belief and determination that the swim was possible. So anyway, that was the crew. The fourth member of the crew was this old boat I found on eBay. I managed to convince one of the banks to give me a credit card for $4,000. So I had to buy a yacht for £4,000, which is so difficult. Anyway, after a few too many ales, I found this on the eBay app. I don't remember bidding. That's how many ales we had. I just remember waking up in the morning going, "You have won a yacht." I was like, "What have I done?" But you know, this yacht had character. It was brilliant. It was tiny, 26 foot, which is smaller than an Atlantic rowing boat for four. You know, it was really tiny. And we were going to live inside this little yacht. We had sort of a flamethrower here to light the old paraffin stove. I mean, it was really archaic. No hot water, no running water. But this boat, again, had this belief that that the swim was possible. So day one, I sort of jumped in the water thinking I'm going to swim 20 miles today and prove all the naysayers wrong. Unfortunately, within a mile, we hit our first hurdle, and that was seasickness, something I hadn't really thought about. And not just me, but the entire crew were all seasick, literally everyone. This is M throwing up in a bucket. I was throwing up while swimming, which is the worst experience you can ever imagine. Owen was throwing up overboard. Jez, the skipper, makes me tell everyone at talks that he was definitely not seasick, but I have my doubts. But it was hilarious, you know, that within a mile we had to stop swimming. And then everyone was like, "I told you, mate, told you it wasn't possible." But you know, you overcome these hurdles. And also, there's another rule in adventure. Whenever someone is feeling ill or in pain, you should always take a photo first before you help them out. M hates me for taking this one, but anyway. But you overcome these hurdles, you overcome these obstacles. You're never the best at anything on day one. If you learn a guitar, if you pick up a guitar tomorrow, you're going to have calluses. You know, you're not going to get it right on day one. So anyway, we took the seasick tablets, carried on swimming. Logistically, things were quite difficult. For example, when I stopped swimming in the day, if the boat wasn't anywhere near us, Em and I would go to shore, and then I'd have to sort of hitch a ride to the nearest town to sleep the night, which meant leaving the kayaks. We had to sort of bury the kayaks so no one would nick it, and then the next day sort of hitch a ride back to get back in the water at the same spot, which made life difficult, all these sort of logistics and various sort of things. But we're making progress. Eventually, I was finally getting into the swing of things. The way the tides work in the UK, you've got 6 hours of tide running north, 6 hours of tide running south. Couldn't swim against tide, just not possible, which was forced exploration time. It was amazing. It was 7 hours where I basically had to sit out the tide, which meant coming to shore, exploring the beaches, and it was exactly what I wanted it to be. I was using swimming as a tool for adventure, like you would a bicycle. You know, the swimming was just the vessel I was using to get from A to B. It really was amazing. And then I'd go out and swim again, come back to shore, make a fire, cook all the fish the crew had caught in the day. We'd see we're anchored out in the background there. And it really was amazing adventure. After 10 days, I'd made my way all the way up to Devon. I then, to save time, swam across to Wales. It looks like a massive crossing, but there's a tiny island there. I don't know if you can see it. It's called Lundy Island, famously occupied by pirates hundreds of years ago. You used to get all the cargo ships coming in. I kind of used that as a stop-off point. It's now still, I think, 23 people and about 7 sheep still live on this island. And if everyone gets the opportunity of going to Lundy, I really urge you to go. There's puffins and seals and dolphins. It really is amazing. I finally got over to Wales, feeling really confident that I'd done a big crossing. Every day I was getting more confident in my ability. The original plan was to go up Wales to Anglesey, Isle of Man, back to Scotland and around. And we're in the pub playing around on the iPad and looking at various routes. And we zoomed out a bit and we saw a bit of land off to the west. And we all looked at each other and thought, "Oh, is that another island like Lundy?" We zoomed out and it was actual island. And then we all looked at each other and I thought, "How cool would it be if I swam to Ireland?" Just a bit of a random decision. Owen then said, "Oh, mate, believe it or not, I've never been to Ireland." I'm like, "Owen, you're 35 years old, you're Welsh. On a good day, you can see Ireland. Like, that is unacceptable." And then Em said, "Oh, yeah, I've actually never been to Ireland either." I was like, "That is unacceptable, right? We're going to Ireland." So the next day, instead of turning right, turned left, and hoped somewhere out there was going to be Ireland. We had really no idea. Like, no one swum across the in George's Channel, the Irish Sea. And also, like, we just really had no idea. Are you allowed to? Like, is the Queen going to come? No, it's mine. Like, I mean, who owns the Irish Sea? Well, half of it anyway. But it turns out in Britain there's a fabulous saying, the sea is free. Such sort of historic maritime in our blood and things that actually any of you tomorrow can go and buy a big yacht and take it out to sea. And I love that. So the sea is free. So the day started off quite well. It got a bit choppy within sort of a few hours. And I'm in that wave there somewhere. And this is just to show you, when I went to take my left stroke, there was these little waves that were only about that big, popped up out of nowhere, and my arm actually didn't even leave the water. So it was kind of like swimming underwater half the time. It was really, really difficult. But with every sort of stroke, I was a meter closer and getting more and more confident. After day one, we're sort of in the middle of the Irish Sea, just lost sight of land, feeling confident. Jay said, "Oh, mate, we're just about across the M25. I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, there's a big motorway for ships, a big shipping lane. And we basically have to go straight across it. You can't hang around because these big ships come up and down. You know, literally, they go up one side, there's an invisible barrier, and they come down the other side." So I'm thinking, okay, brilliant, cool. Well, we'll just go straight across. "How wide is it, mate?" I asked him, thinking he'll say, "Oh, about a mile." He goes, "Oh, it's 20 miles wide." I was like, "What? 20 miles wide?" This is when the reality of how difficult the swim was going to be really hit me, because within an hour, all of a sudden, I was swimming along, and these massive tankers were just going... We had radio in the position on Channel 16 to the Coast Guard and to everyone else. Firstly, they would laugh, like, "Yeah, whatever, mate. Don't, you know, stop taking up the line." We're like, no, really, this is happening. But it was scary, you know, because they come out of nowhere. Our little boat could do 2.5 miles an hour, three. These do about 30, 35, you know. They're just really bombing it along, which made life really difficult. But it took about a day and a half, and eventually I got across to the other side feeling so confident. And literally, at that moment of rejoice and happiness, I met my nemesis of the swim in the form of lion's mane jellyfish. They're about the size of a football, and the tentacles go 3 meters in all directions. And it was the most uncomfortable experience I've ever felt in my life. The tentacles were going up my nose, in my eyes, everywhere. And literally, just kept face planting them, which was really, really uncomfortable. There's also a myth about what fixes jellyfish stings, and that is to pee on it. I'm telling you right now, that does not work at all. And it was very embarrassing, considering I got stung on the face. I will move on. But what did work, actually, is I had a bit of a beard. And where I had a beard is where the tentacles wouldn't physically touch my skin. So from that day on, I sort of grew my beard in protest against the jellyfish as jellyfish protection, and it certainly worked. Ironically, it made me look exactly like a lion's mane jellyfish, so they're probably coming to have a chat. But anyway, I got over that deal. I started having to do a few more night sessions. I have a wild imagination, so swimming at night in the middle of the Irish Sea when you can't see land and getting stung by jellyfish is the scariest thing you can ever imagine. I had to wear my reflective armbands because of the cheese rolling shoulder. I tried to put a bandana over my nose and cheeks because that's where I was still getting stung, but that kind of just stopped me breathing, which is kind of important. So it just really was tough. But eventually, after 4 days, we saw some land in the distance, and it was Ireland, thankfully, and that ended up being my route because of the tide sort of pushing me left and right. Finally got to Ireland thinking, yes, I've made it. I've made the difficult bit crossing to Ireland. I was greeted with typical brilliant Irish weather, obviously, cold and misty. But look how calm it is. Look how dead calm it is. By going to Ireland meant Ireland was sheltering me from all the westerly winds, which meant there were no waves at all. And that random decision in the pub was probably the make or break, because I think if I'd carried on going up Wales like I'd originally planned, if I'd stuck to this kind of schedule, I probably wouldn't have made it because the waves would have been too big. And there's a message there which I kind of try and say is, you might have these big ideas, but if you get too rigid in them and don't let yourself be a little bit flexible, you're kind of going against the whole idea why you wanted to do it in the first place. I got to Ireland, and I remember thinking back to Martin Strull, one of my favorite swimmers. I remember the guy who swam the Amazon. He also famously drank 2 bottles of wine every day while he was swimming. So I thought, wow, well, maybe that's what it takes to be a real swimmer. You have to drink wine. Maybe that's what it is. So I thought I'd have some wine during one of my lunch breaks. That's how I'd feed in the water. I'd have a bowl lying on my back. Annoyingly, I just vomited straight away, fed the fish, and put me firmly back in my place that I'm not a real swimmer just yet. But I'd made it to Ireland, and Ireland was amazing. I was greeted with amazing waves, amazing weather. I had people come and swim with me, friends. Bob came and swam with me. Bob's a seal over there. I swam with seals and dolphins almost every single day, which is something I never really thought would ever happen in UK waters. And I called him Bob because literally when I would sort of breathe, he would pop up and then we'd look at each other under the water. And it was kind of amazing. And it really was cool. I put this on Twitter and Facebook and everyone's like, aha, which one's the seal, mate? I was like, aha, funny. Anyway, Ireland was great. I took another month working my way up Ireland, got to Northern Ireland, ready to cross back over to Scotland, feeling really confident. I'm like, I was counting my chickens here. I was like, it's a done deal. You know, Scotland is that bit of the top of the UK. You go there once a year on holiday, maybe, when there's no midges. Surely once I'm there, it's a done deal. About 4 days before the crossing, I woke up and Jez, my skipper, had a really worried look on his face. He's like, mate, I've got some bad news. So I'm thinking, oh, you know, what is that? Maybe there's bad weather, maybe the boat has got a leak, you know, all these sort of things. He said, no, mate, I'm sorry, but I've been offered my dream job, and I'm going to have to leave the swim. And I remember my heart sinking, because without a skipper, I couldn't carry on. It was just too dangerous. You can't do the swim in one season on your own, really. But I thought, I've come this far, I'll definitely find another skipper. Unfortunately, I was very, very wrong. I went to every yacht club I could find in the area, put loads of things on forums online, and the general consensus from skippers were, mate, you know, I'd love to get involved, but if you die, you know, am I going to be held responsible? Because technically, I was the one taking you out and putting you in that situation. And it was really difficult. And then after 5 days, eventually Jez left. We found the little harbor in Northern Ireland, and Jez left. And I just remember him walking down this pontoon and my dreams kind of going with him. After another week, I eventually sent the rest of the crew home. You know, Owen and Em, I said, you guys go home, see your families. You know, if I don't have another skipper, it's game over. Another week went by after that, so it'd been now 2 weeks when I was literally on the verge of saying, well, this is it. I was going to have to sell the boat in Northern Ireland and come home. And when I woke up one morning and had a tweet from someone called Lou, she was in Turkey on holiday, and she said, Sean, I've got 10 days more holiday. I can come and help you get to Scotland. Maybe you'll have more luck finding a skipper once you're in Scotland. And I said, that's amazing, Lou. Called the crew back. Lou came literally pretty much from Gatwick with all her kit. And she gave me, not only did she give me 10 days of her time, she actually landed up giving me 78 days of her time. Because at this moment, I wasn't even halfway. If you look at a map of the UK, when you cross over to the Mullican Tyre, you're not even halfway yet. Scotland is that big. If I'd known that at the time, yeah, I'm glad I actually didn't know that at the time. Naivety is brilliant. But anyway, I'd made it to Scotland, was greeted with amazing Scottish weather, thinking that, you know, this and scenery, thinking this is it. This is the final leg. Unfortunately, Scotland had different ideas for me. Those big whirlpools where you land up in Australia, some of them kind of exist. This one here is called the Corrievechan, another thing you need to check out on YouTube. I believe it's the third biggest whirlpool in the world. It's about 100 meters wide. If you go anywhere near those whirlpools, you probably do land up in Australia, honestly. They really are that dangerous. So I had to make my way up all these little back alleys and all these side places, which just made life really, really difficult. I also started to lose loads of weight. I'm quite light anyway, and I don't carry a lot of body fat, but you also need internal body fat around your kidneys, your liver and things. So I went down to below 10 stone. I'm obviously breathing in here to see how much internal body fat I've lost. Now, yeah, I was about 59, 60 kgs, lost all the fat around my organs, which meant all the blood was staying around my chest while I was swimming in 11-degree water, which meant I started to sort of get frostbite in my toes. So my toes started to go black and swell, exactly like you'd get in frostbite. Now, obviously, frostbite, the tissue's freezing, so that's stopping blood going in. Mine was just lack of circulation, and then I would knock it, and it would swell. There was no sort of white blood cells to repair any damage from me stubbing my toe. I kind of let it go for about a week, thinking it'll be better, it'll get better, it'll get better. It definitely didn't get better. I thought, well, I should probably go and see a doctor now. You know, this is getting quite serious. Because I actually put this on Twitter, then obviously your leg's going to fall off as soon as you put something like that on Twitter. But eventually I went to the doctor and I sat down and I had my sock on and I took my sock off and he stared at it for about 10 seconds. He then turned around, got a pair of scissors and goes, oh, we can cut it off, mate. You don't need that toe. I was like, whoa, buddy, I kind of like my toe. And he was genuinely annoyed. He's like, oh, come on, you'll be a real adventurer, like Ranulf Fiennes. So I was like, whoa, please, can I keep my toe? And he was like, he turned around, he got some antibiotics, said, oh, you can have these instead. I was like, you could have probably started with that, mate. But it was kind of nice, you know, it was kind of nice for the first time to actually get someone who really, who probably should have said, stop swimming, mate. You need to rest up. You need to warm up. You need to fatten up. But he knew I wasn't going to stop swimming. And that was kind of nice to get that support. Carried on in Scotland. But Scotland was just so tough. Everything went wrong in Scotland. And that seems to happen in these adventures. Everything goes wrong at the end. The boat broke down. It was a 1961 boat, and the engine hadn't been serviced in 100 years. Luckily, Owen knew how to fix old Yanmar engines. Who knew? Definitely didn't have that in the application form. So that was lucky. But things were really tough. The commute, the crew used to call it, Sean's commute to work. So in Scotland, I was swimming probably 3 miles offshore, and then it was probably a good 8 to 10 miles to get to a safe anchorage and then back. So you're looking at 3 hours each way just to get me to where I finished swimming, the GPS pinpoint. So the Owen and Lou were just chugging along in the freezing cold. It started to snow in Scotland, the snow on the mountains swimming across these locks. It really was a miserable place. But eventually, after about a month in Scotland, I'd made my way up to Cape Wrath, to that point at which you sort of go around. And I remember thinking, right, once I'm there, it's dead straight to the end. You know, you can almost see John O'Groats. You can smell it. I'd had a picture on my laptop, which I downloaded, of John O'Groats Harbour, and I just visualized this harbour. You know, for now, 4 months I'd been swimming. I thought it was going to take two and a half, so that's 2 months overboard. And it's really difficult to sort of motivate yourself to do the same stuff over and over again. But I thought, once I get to Cape Wrath, that's it. Turn right, and it's a home straight all the way to the end. Unfortunately, it's called Cape Wrath for a reason. And literally, as soon as I got there, this is an hour before we got to Cape Wrath. It was really calm. Got to Cape Wrath, and this freak storm came out of nowhere. M capsized. We lost the kayak. It landed up getting washed away. The rib we were dragging overturned as well. We lost everything in the rib. I had to stop swimming, obviously, and I jumped on board. And it took about 2.5 hours to try and fight this storm to find an anchorage. I tried to take a picture with my phone, but it really doesn't do it any justice because that's the boat going left and right. Waves were literally crashing down into the boat itself. It really was a scary moment. Eventually, we got to this safe anchorage on the north coast and sort of assessed the damage. And you don't really know how dangerous it is. And the thing that really struck home was Em's paddle that had snapped in half from the waves because when she got capsized and there was a bit of rope. And you can see the rib that we had. We had spare water, diesel, oars, anchors. Everything in the rib behind us was all empty because that overturned. And this kind of made me realize, wow, this is not a good place to be. North coast of Scotland in November. I mean, the winter was setting in fast. And it really was a depressing moment because I'm sitting there on the boat, freezing cold. You can see the moisture coming out my breath going, well, this is it. We looked at the weather and it looked like it was the winter had really set in. And once those waves pick up, that north coast of Scotland is just really treacherous. And I started to beat myself up, you know. I thought, oh, I wish I'd started a month earlier. I wish I'd swum quicker. I wish I'd found a skipper earlier. All these sort of things. Where I was sort of focusing on the negativities. And, you know, every day it was, no, we can't swim, Sean. No, we can't swim. No, we can't swim. I'd try and go out and try and swim a mile, but, you know, it wouldn't happen. And we'd come back in, stuck in this little lock, and we'd try and go to shore a few times. And it was really depressing because I'd come so close. I was so close to the end. But the reality was that I was potentially going to have to finish the swim at Cape Wrath and come back the following summer when the weather was good to finish that last 4 or 5 days. And that was so difficult to deal with in my mind because that would have taken away from the whole idea. It took 2 weeks of sitting in these various little locks near Cape Wrath, realizing that this is probably it and we're going to have to go home. By now, the crew had been away from their family for 4.5 months, you know, unpaid. I owe them everything, really. Until one day, Lou came in and she said, Sean, we got 3 days. If we don't do these 3 days now, it's game over. We know we've got to make the most of these 3 days. And for those 3 days, I really don't remember anything. I just gave everything. I couldn't leave anything left in the tank. And I just gave it my all and swam as fast as I could. And eventually, after 135 days of swimming, 4.5 months at sea, I arose at John O'Groats Harbour, looking like a hairy Viking. After finally having completed this world's first ever length of Britain swim. Now, I had counted my chickens before this moment many, many times, crossing over to Wales, crossing over to Ireland, crossing back to Scotland, Cape Wrath, you know, but it wasn't over till it's over. But a mile before this moment, I kind of knew it was in the bag. You know, worst case scenario, I was going to do doggy paddle a meter from the shore to make it. I was going to finish, right? I'd also been sent a tweet from John O'Groats Harbour with all the media activity there. You know, a world's first ever swim. Everyone, like in the movies, you know, the vans with their satellite dishes, like there was about 10 of those vans. Everyone was there. ITV, STV, The One Show, BBC, everyone except Sky, who said, if it's not football, we don't care, mate. Woo! Anyway, and they were like, someone said, oh, they're doing a live swimming on News 24. This is being broadcast around the world. 50 million people are probably going to watch you come out the water. I was like, whoa, 50 what? 50 billion. I was like, ooh, I should probably say something important. and for that last mile, while I'm swimming there, you know, just thinking in my head, like, what have I learned? What have I learned? 4.5 months doing something that generally was considered impossible. What have I learned? And I guess there was two things that I took from the swim, really. One is never let other people's opinion of your ability affect your decisions in life, right? Because many, many, many people's opinion that swimming the length of Britain was impossible. Many people's opinion that a 5'8" kid born in Zimbabwe, which is landlocked, there is no ocean, couldn't swim one of the longest sea swims in history and the longest coastal swim in history. You know, there's many people's opinion. If I had listened to them, I wouldn't have done it. And I wouldn't have done the one thing in my life that has changed me overnight. It's made me more confident in the rest of my life and has made me really believe in my potential, both physically, mentally, and whatever I do. And that would have been so sad to miss that because I'd listened to people's opinion of me, right? The second thing I wanted to sort of share to the world is we're all a lot more physically and mentally strong than we think we are. You know, if you had told me 5 years ago when I was a miserable photographer in London that one day, Sean, you'll swim the length of Britain for 135 days, I would have laughed at you, honestly. I mean, that was just so beyond my realms of what I thought I was able to achieve. I wouldn't have done it. But actually, the reality is if we all just push our bar a little bit up, a little bit more, we are capable of doing a lot more than we think we are. That's what I wanted to tell 50 million people. Instead, I just cried like a baby and talked about getting stung in the face by jellyfish and weeing and things like that, which is all very embarrassing. So I never actually got to tell anyone about my message, which is why I'm kind of here today. I'm super passionate about sort of people pushing themselves, having this big goal and going for it, because I think it really does make your life, gives you purpose and gives you more confidence when you achieve it. And I stand here today, I'm really proud of the fact that I decided to go and do this crazy swim a couple of years ago and finally have completed the world's first ever length of Britain swim. And I guess my message, as I said before, is if you have a big idea, guys, you know, really do push it out there. Find people who support you. Don't listen to the naysayers, because honestly, you can do a lot more than you think you can. Thank you very much. Thank you. We're going to have a few questions, but before I go on, I just want to say every year on my birthday, I give £1,000 away to someone to go off and have an adventure, because, you know, I realize you know, some adventures do cost a bit of money. You might want to get a babysitter for your kids. I'll pay for that if you want. whatever it is, I don't care. If you've got a big idea, applications close on the 6th of March this year. I give the money away on my birthday, the 6th of April. So if get your thinking caps on. I'd love to be able to give one of you £1,000 to go off and do one of your dreams. So thank you very much. But right, any? Do we have time for questions? Yeah. We have time for questions, yes. Does anyone have any questions? Have I got plans to go the other way, as in swim? Swim the other way, yeah. So the reason I swam up the west coast was wind with tide. It's a shorter distance as well. It's a bit warmer. And I'm done with swimming, I think. Yeah, I think I've had enough. Yes.
Hi, thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
What is your next challenge?
What is my next challenge? Right, so I've done Land's End to John O'Groats 4 times now. I've swum it, cycled it, run it. I ran it last year. I also, in November, broke the world record for sailing it, which was amazing. 83 hours and 53 minutes, except I was seasick for 50 hours of that. Again, I thought I'd, I live on an old World War II gunboat. I thought I was over seasickness, but no, definitely not. So I've sailed it. So I would like to do one more Land's End to John O'Groats. I've done land and sea. I'd like to do air. So watch the space for that. But my next big adventure, I can't really talk too much about it. But in April this year, I'm starting a really, really, really long Ironman. So a normal Ironman takes, 15 hours, I guess. My one is 3 months, somewhere there. So it's a really, really 3,500-mile cycle, an 800-mile run, and then a 100-mile swim, all self-supported. I start on the 2nd of April. But where in the world and what? You're going to have to watch the space. It's very exciting. So I'm in the middle of training at the moment. So that's coming up next. Any more questions? Another one. Okay, you're on fire.
So how many applications do you have for your £1,000 adventure?
How many applications? I think I have about 50 so far. I try and not read them when they come in. I don't want to be biased to an idea because I've read it earlier on. So I keep them all in a folder, and then I'll look through them in March. So, please, if you've got a big idea, honestly, whatever, you can literally give, pay the babysitter to look after the kids while you go away for the weekend if you want. I don't really matter. I don't mind. So, think of a cool idea. Yes, there's one at the back over there.
Hello, fascinating. But what is your cure for seasickness, if there is one?
Time, 50 hours, apparently. We all struggled on the swim. I struggle now. I've tried all the pills and things like that. Generally they say after 2 days you get over it. Unfortunately, you're not often on a boat for more than 2 days at one stretch generally, so it is difficult. But I think Quells seems to be the thing that people take that seems to work. Quells seasick tablets, you can pick them up anywhere. Or Stugeron, but Stugeron make you a bit sleepy. But try the Quells. I've tried everything else. I've tried the bracelets. They didn't work. Ginger, I think you have to eat loads of ginger. I thought I had enough ginger generally. Yeah, that didn't work at all. But you just got to deal with those first few days of illness. But you definitely get your legs. That's the one positive. You definitely do get over it. And then it's amazing. One over here in the front, I think.
Hiya. Well, just to say, I do love you.
Thank you very much.
What is your tip for anyone who wants to try open water swimming?
So if you want to try open water swimming, firstly, go out and just enjoy it. Don't try and overthink it. Don't try and be the best. Just go out there, paddle around, and have fun. But technique, you want to get your technique down. It's all about breathing. And, it could be a huge difference in your posture by having your head. So if you have your head there, what happens is you drop your chest and then your back goes like that. So you sink in the water. But if you drop your head like that, look what happens to your posture. And then when the water flows over your head, it creates this little loop here where you can breathe in. So you can actually be breathing almost below water level just with your posture. So actually, and then you get less chafe on the wetsuit if you're wearing a wetsuit and things like that. But if you can, if you've got the option of getting a little session done where you get an endless pool and they film you, it's a little bit expensive, but to get that session done. But actually, if you have a passion about doing it properly for a long period of time, you could improve by 300% just by changing a few little things in your style. So once you get your style right, then it's amazing. And then the waves are crashing over you, and you can kind of feel the water because you kind of know if there's a wave coming, so you don't breathe on that stroke. It really is amazing once you get into it. So yeah, just get your style right and just kind of enjoy it. Don't get bogged down by the things that are annoying you.
I want to know whether you varied your stroke. Whether you changed what you were doing?
No, front crawl, breathing to the right the whole time. In the little training I did bilateral breathing, so every third stroke, but all the waves were coming in from my left. So every time I tried to breathe to my left, I would just drink a wave. So I kind of did, the same stroke, which is perfectly normal. And if you whatever you do in training, just stick with that. And I also wouldn't be too clever about doing more than one stroke a breath. I would just breathe on every one, and you just kind of get into that routine. So yeah, that's what I did. Doggy paddle a few times. Right, well, thank you very much. If anyone's too shy to ask questions, I will be hanging around here. So I'm more than happy to answer your questions. But thank you very much, guys. Have a big idea, apply for my scholarship, and keep adventuring. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sean Conway.